Hey, and welcome to another episode of Untalented. Today I'm joined by Andrew and James, the ECDs of Leo Burnett. Hello. Hey guys, how Hi. Are you both?
Yeah, really good, really good. I've been on holiday for the past 2 weeks, so I'm still getting back into the swing of things and remembering how to do this, yeah.
Pretty dreamlike. It's always stranger when you get back, isn't it? It's like, what's my real job? Who am
yeah,
I?
Yeah, I've been catching up with everyone and just like, I was just saying before we jumped onto this podcast, like how exhausting it is working in advertising, and that's absolutely true. And I remembered that yesterday when mm-hmm. I got back.
And I've been experiencing that for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, alone.
He's been off.
Even worse doing it alone, yeah. I think. Well, I kick straight in. First question that we ask is, who is the first person to make you feel talented? I'm assuming you'll both have different answers. So.
Yeah, that's like the weird thing about being a creative team, right? It's like you kind of get asked everything as a collective, but as an individual as well. So I'm sure we will.
To find somebody that perfectly aligns with like
our lives. We meet at a certain point.
Yeah, I guess I can go first. And we definitely will have different answers. And I suppose we'll have different answers as our experience of in the creative industry versus just our life generally. But I always say this about our own journey and my own journey within creativity, not just like the advertising industry, just but within creativity. And I think it's really interesting because without giving away like what generation I'm from or anything, mm-hmm. My like school years, so like very first years of like high school, for example, were literally at the exact same time as like when the internet was first like a thing that people like spent time doing. So I feel really lucky because of that, because a lot of the things that we use day to day is creativity now, like design and Photoshop and writing is things that we were doing for fun back then, just because this new cool thing had been introduced to our lives. And I was an absolute nerd back then, spent way too long on the internet, like writing like fan fiction, design. And I think getting that feedback live through like, it wasn't social media back at that point, but it was still social in the sense that people were reacting live to the things that we were writing and designing. I think that's the first time that we actually had like that commentary back, which is, this is really cool, I really like this. And that's the first time on an individual level I kind of felt like, or maybe I've got something creatively that I can continue to do because it's something that I enjoy and it's something that people seem to enjoy me doing. So I guess that's the first time I really felt that.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess, yeah, my answer is quite, my answer is exactly the same. No, my answer is a bit different, I think. I don't know. I don't know if, it's a weird sort of situation where you don't know if you ever quite feel talented. I don't know if that's something that like all people have who work in like a creative industry. So yeah, it's one of those things where you're always thinking, oh, maybe I'm okay at this. Maybe I'm all right at this, you know, which obviously you sort of, when you look at like, yeah, okay, I'm in a decent position, a pretty good agency. I'm obviously not too bad. But I don't know if you ever feel like fully like super like talented. I don't personally, maybe that's a classic creative sort of insecurity, but I'd say if anything, it would probably come I grew up in like a single parent household, my mum. And my mum was always like, you know, I mean, she would say anything I did was brilliant, but maybe that's it was like most parents would do.
Right?
But like, I guess she was like, no matter what I did, I guess I could, it was probably, you know, thinking back, it's probably all terrible stuff. But my mum was really like encouraging on that perspective. Like I grew up, you know, in a council house with not much money. And the one thing we always had in the house was like things for creativity. Well, you had to be quite creative because there wasn't that much to do, to be honest. One thing we always made sure there was like pencil crayons and papers and stuff like that. And she was always like super encouraging like creative things, I think, within the house rather than like, classic sort of like, you know, the sciences or the maths and things. Although, yeah, she pushed them as well. But she was really, you know, she's really supportive of all the creative sort of things that I used to do.
Yeah.
Even like things like taking apart radios and stuff like that as a kid. I don't know if that even is creative.
No, it definitely is. I think it's just like that encouragement, isn't it, from someone or something, whether it is like people on the internet that you don't know, or whether it's your parent who's pushing you to be like, well, no, you can do this and it's okay to do it. And actually, it's pretty good. And even if it's not good, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I think exactly. that's the thing, isn't it?
Like, I feel like I should just say as well, my mum was also. This. I just didn't want to give
back.
She's
going to listen and be like, what?
Because I feel like, who told you you're talented? Like, my mum would tell me I'm talented if I absolutely wasn't. So,
yeah.
It's more about me that nobody's ever said it to me, apart from my mum.
No, but I think that's such a mum thing, isn't it? Like, you can do the most like ridiculous, stupid thing, and they're like, amazing, brilliant
exactly.
work. You're like, cool, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Jim is right, though, because I feel like somebody once told me this, and I never really thought about it this way until they did tell me it. But they said to me, every creative is like always skirting on the border of like confidence and insecurity, and that you could go from being really confident about something to really insecure about something in like you know, like a click of a finger. And I think that is really true. And I think you need that insecurity to be able to push yourself and be able to like keep exploring and, to go again and to have that resilience.
And I think to keep you grounded as well. Like it's like you could, I don't know. I mean, I'm maybe it is brilliant to just walk around thinking you're amazing at what you do, but like I definitely don't necessarily, you know, so I don't think, you know, we do.
No,
so
definitely not.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things in retrospect as well, isn't it? When you look back on something and you're like, God, why was I so insecure or scared about that? Or why was we so confident about that? Because it was a flopper. Like there's always like,
it's probably more the latter of the two. When we look back at our old work, we're like, God, that was absolutely
That's what I definitely think that. And that's why I think there's a difference probably between being, told that you're talented or someone telling you that you're talented versus that feeling of like, oh, I am talented. It probably takes, maybe you never quite truly find that, but it probably takes a little bit of time and a little bit of like confidence in your own work to be able to like, I don't know, like put the two things together.
Yeah, I think that it's like, there must be snippets of it along the way, but I don't know whether anyone can truly sit and be like, I've got this, like I'm really talented at this. It's like, you'll have a snippet of, this went really well, or this was great, or this was something that people loved. And then, yeah, there's always that like driving force, isn't there? Which I think is, it's a weird job, really. Like you're being tested and critiqued on your how your brain works and what ideas you're thinking of, which is insane. So, yeah, I don't know whether there's ever that like level of security of just being like, we've got this.
Exactly. No, no. I think people as well, in just talking about specifically like working in advertising, I think you sort of receive that actually in different ways as well. So if we think back to like our first boss that we ever had, our first creative director, he would never out and out say like, oh, you're this is brilliant, you're really talented. But then you get to like, you know, we've been working at Leo's and like Mark and Shaka before as well. Like they were people who would like really give you that confidence verbally. Whereas our first creative director, maybe like Graham, he would like, he'd make you feel it somehow, but he would never literally like out and out say it.
Which is then also mad, isn't it? When you're looking at different leaders and leadership styles and that sort of stuff, which I'm sure we'll get onto later, but how much like how it makes you feel rather than just what your like day-to-day is and how that actually then impacts you throughout the entirety of your career. Like you're still thinking about your first CD or and how that works, which is really interesting. How did you both get started in the industry?
I feel like I always say our path into the industry was probably quite a traditional path into the industry, but I don't actually know if that is the case for like the way that people find their way into the industry. Now I know from talent that joins us at Leo's, like we find talent from all different places and all different paths of experience to lead them into the industry. But for us personally, it was very much, we met at ad school. It was a university degree for literally creative advertising. That was it. All we had to do for our degree was sit around and come up with ideas. Like,
so good.
I can't actually believe that is a course that existed, especially back then when there weren't like that many of them. It was quite like forward thinking at the time. So we met then, and it was really weird because there's a group, it must have been like 20 or 30 students on the course, and there's a group of like maybe six, eight guys, and we kind of like you do sort of at that age, you sort of like gravitate towards, we gravitate towards all the guys, and there's a group of girls, and literally like one of the first days of the course, the tutor said, okay, what we're going to do now is pair up. And we thought that meant, all right, we'll pair up for
just for the course,
the next like, you know, the next session, the next hour, if I can, and we'll do whatever exercise it is for the next hour together. And we didn't realize at that point that when she said pair up, she meant like a lifelong 20
a marriage. Yeah, 20 years later.
Yeah,
so I feel like that's maybe on them that they didn't explain that.
Yeah, no, they didn't explain that. I don't know if that would have changed anything. I maybe wouldn't be doing this podcast if we'd have known that back then. But so we did that as a course, and then we went on the like the cream and the new blood kind of circuit, and we were super super lucky. I always think that that we were. We were given the opportunity to come to London to do some book crits by people that saw our work at DNAD, actually. And it wasn't easy at that point. It was like we're both from the north, so we had to like get the train down and we had to like try and line up as many book crits at the time and try and like, and the amount of times when people would just phone us on the morning or while we're already on the train or while we're like hanging around in London somewhere.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, oh, actually, and now as an ECD, a big agency, I can kind of
you get
appreciate,
it.
I get a bit more, but at the time it was like, what on earth are these people doing? You know, we paid £40 for this train ticket.
But I do think like people don't realise how much of a big deal it is getting a train to London when you're northern and younger. Like, I've obviously done it as well. And it's such a big thing to be like, right, I'm at the train station, I've got all my things, I've got to go to the big city. Like, don't know how to navigate when I'm there, don't know what the tubes were. Like, I do think that people don't, when you live in London, you take it for granted, don't you? You've been like, everyone can just pop down. And it's like, no, we can't. It's a massive thing.
And I definitely don't look like what use this time to rant about train fares. I definitely could do. But it was a case of like trying to be organized at that point and trying to like line up as many places as we could just to like try and show our book. And at the end of all that, we one of the last ones we had actually was M&C Saatchi, and Graham Fink was a creative director at the time. And at that time, a creative director was probably like the equivalent of like, say, a CCO or something now. And again, it was the same thing. We'd been waiting in reception for like 2 or 3 hours.
Oh my God.
And then you get that phone call and you sort of know what that phone call is. And it was like, oh yeah, Graham's running busy. You know, he's probably not going to be able to make the meeting. And we genuinely said at that point, and this is the first time we ever did that, we're here, we sat downstairs, we'll sit here as long as it takes him to finish his meetings. And I think that was like just the frustration and the time of like, we've come to London, we've done it for like 4 or 5 weeks in a row now.
Yeah. Booked an open return.
And I'm glad we did, because then that's what led us to our first job.
I think he probably appreciated that, like that, he's like one of those characters that probably appreciate that perseverance as well. It's like, oh, fuck, stubborn.
Yeah, you can imagine him like eye rolling, can't you? Been like, oh, just get them out of here. Yeah, but then actually
probably
been grateful.
An extra hour or something that night just to like keep
looking
testing
over the balcony. I'm still there.
I could definitely imagine that. And then we were there at that first agency for like 7 years. And I think it's fair to say, I don't know if you would agree with this, but I feel like we were not like fast starters in the creative industry. And we've got teams now as ECDs at Leo's. We've got junior teams who are absolutely flying, and they come with ideas that we would have not even ever dreamt of like in our first few years. So I think we were definitely like not fast starters. But what I've realized now looking back on it is we were learning like so much and from so many different people. And what was great about that agency at that time was they had a bunch of clients, and it was a big agency, and they were always bringing in people to give us talks, people to share experience with us. And I think even though we weren't able to take that and put it into practice at the time, we were still absorbing it. And then as we moved agencies, which maybe Jim can talk about, as we moved agencies, we kind of started to put things together, and the lessons that we learned then kind of started helping us out for like roles that we'd had since.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. I think we picked up different things, I think, from different agencies. Like Andy said, I don't think you realise exactly what it is you're learning maybe at the time from those people, but you definitely do. And we picked up certain things from our days at M&C Saatchi, and then different things, you know, then you go and work with a different bunch of creative directors in different places, and you're learning different things from different people, and then carrying that forward each time. And you are able to, I think it's quite a retrospective sort of industry in a way. You always sort of look back at the things you sort of were doing and things that you'd learned along the way, whether that's sort of like, a creative director had introduced sort of like keynote training and things like that. And you're like, okay, this is really brilliant, and now I'm going to take this. And then you move to the next agency, and then you're like, oh, you're the guys that come and do really brilliant presentations, you know, and then that becomes a thing there. And then you learn something from there and you take that to the next place. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of stuff you pick up.
Yeah. And it's like at the time when you're doing it, you're probably thinking, God, we'll never need this. Or why are they doubling down on this so much? Or why are we taking so long on this point? And then it's like 3 years in the future, you suddenly have a moment of thinking, definitely. Thank God.
I could probably like distill it down into like take each of the periods of the leaders that we've learned from. And I could probably distill it down as simply as like, for Miss Leader, we learned about craft and attention to detail. And for Miss Leader, we learned about how to present work. And then for Miss Leader, we learned how to make sure that the work is always human and true. And I literally think it's as simple as that, really. And then we've become now a product of putting, I guess, all of those lessons together, as well as like developing our own taste and our own point of view.
This must happen like through every sort of generation of people. It's always like this kind of thing where people always look back and stuff. But I do think we look back to like that first time that we started in advertising, and to Andy's point, that's the one where I think we learned like the craft. But I think we were very fortunate in a sense of there was a lot more time then. Like you would get like a couple of weeks to do like a 48 sheet campaign and that was it. And also you'd have time to then go and sit with like the retoucher and the, you know, the photographer and spend the day. You know, like you'd have so much time to be able to sort of learn those craft skills, which is something which I think is actually really important, given us like, yes, so much like education on that process. And it's really important, I think, as well, as we sort of, you know, in our role now, to make sure that the team sort of as much as possible, although that time is inevitably going to be truncated with the amount of work you do now. You know, things like all the social, you know, advertising that you do didn't exist back then. It literally was TV and posters and stuff like that, and radio. It was like, you know, Channel 4, ITV, BBC, TV, you know. Well, it wasn't, but that, you know, the equivalent of. So yeah, like, it's important, I think, as we sort of progress into the, you know, as ECDs, to make sure the teams have as much time as possible to sort of learn that craft, I think, as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask, actually, you mentioned that you felt that you were maybe slow starters in, and that, like, looking back now versus the teams that you have, do you think, like, what, do you think there's things that are lost with these junior teams having to be suddenly so advanced and so much quicker?
Probably benefits and, like, and disadvantages, I think. Like, the time is a massive thing, I think, like I said. Like, we were fortunate that we were given that time to craft, and now it's I don't think it's quite in the same place. Unfortunately, timelines and things like that, clients need things, it's trickier.
Yeah, but then you gain something as well, because everything's a lot faster, and that makes the creative process a bit faster. But actually, when you think about it, the way that the audience, which is actually the important thing, especially when you think of like what we do at Leo's, which is all about populist creativity, the audience is consuming the things that we make a lot faster, and their attention span is a lot shorter. And I think talent coming to the business now probably get that way. We had to learn that as a lesson, whereas they've like grown up with that as just like a fact of their lives. I think there's, like most things, there's like there's things that you gain and things that you lose, and for us and what we do now, well, it's, I guess it's about trying to keep hold of the things that we've learned that we think have been really valuable to us, things like craft, things like the importance of clarity and like what an actual advertising idea is, because there's so many ways in which an idea can come to life. I think sometimes it's easy to forget, but what actually is the creative idea at the heart of each of these executions? So things that are fundamental to our kind of like creative journey that we've been on, trying to keep hold of them, but then also like learn from the teams that we're bringing in, and also just like keep ourselves educated on media and trends and all things like that, and hopefully put those things together. That's what we try and do, and it's a journey for both parties, I guess, in that respect.
Yeah, for sure. I think I was listening to another podcast. I won't mention it. I only listen to this one. But it was about Billie Eilish and her new album with Zane Lowe, and they were saying about attention spans and how people are consuming things so much faster. But they also were saying, which I think ties into the craft of things, if something is really good and really speaks to people, they will take time to listen or watch or consume. And it's like striking that balance, isn't it? Of like, we need to deliver and make this happen faster, but also we need to get people to like hover on it and watch it, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, it is.
We made a social film, let's say, when like it was earlier on in sort of, it was when it would have been about 15 years ago or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a spoof for MasterChef.
Amazing already.
Right. And this is when MasterChef was at its like height, right? So this was like, you know, one of the biggest finals in MasterChef when everybody was talking about it. It was like general news as well. And we did a spoof of it where we sort of cut together sort of like alternate sort of foods that went with it, and it went really well. It's part of a competition that they did in the agency to see who could make a video that went viral. And I'm doing air quotes there for anybody who hasn't seen it. We did really well on that. But it was a 4-minute film that we made, and I watched it again the other week, and I was like, oh my god, this is so boring. It's unbelievable. And it went, you know, it got like 2 million views. It was in like the Mail and like the Metro and stuff like that. But I look at it now and I'm like, the way people consuming content, like, even me myself who made it, you know, with Andy and another guy, like it was, I'm like, God, this is not,
yeah, you're like
not
looking
good
at the clock.
I'm like, why was it so long? Like, so
it is mad though, isn't it? Even just that time scale of how things have changed.
Yeah, because if you watched that, you would honestly, it was like 4 minutes long, and like the frame rate is probably about like 12 frames a second or something. It's literally
amazing.
So janky. It's terrible.
Yeah, you're looking back.
It was really good there. But like I said, like if you like that wouldn't work now.
Yeah,
like just the way people are consuming is completely different.
I think it's like one thing, like when we're talking about like just our journey into the industry and like all the different people that we've learned from. One thing that we feel really fortunate, I think, now is, as ECDs of an agency is, and we've worked for all different types of leaders, so everyone's had different backgrounds, but for us personally, like we really value the fact that we've kind of like had every single job along the way as a creative, from literally the creatives that were out you know, getting rejected by everyone showing our book, to being terrible junior creatives, to, you know, all, every journal on the way, creative director, now ECD. Like, so I feel like it's really easy for us to be able to relate to the teams that we're working with and kind of put ourselves in their shoes of, like, how it feels in each of those moments. And I think that's something that, for us, we find that really valuable, because, like, we are very much, like, hands-on with the work, and we want to be there helping the teams, like, make the best work of their careers, hopefully. And I think being able to relate like that is something that's, like, just so valuable. So although there's, like, millions of different paths into the industry now, I wouldn't, like, change our personal one. I'm really actually grateful for it.
Yeah, and I think it's, like, empathetic leadership, isn't it? Which now the ECDs of now are actually doing and understanding. Mm-hmm. And it's, and I think it comes from a place of, obviously, through the journey of what you've learned and how you want to be perceived as an ECD and how you want to act, but also in the sense of, well, we had someone that maybe didn't see us in that light or support us in that way, and we're still grateful for what they did and not taking that away, but actually it's made us realise we can do it in a different way, and it'll still be, like, as impactful and as powerful. Yeah,
yeah. Times have changed a lot as well since those days of the sort of really brutal creative directors.
Like, yeah, it terrifies me to even think about it. Yeah,
you probably heard, like, stories of, like, the, you know, like, moving the paper being closer so you can just, like, drop, like, that's definitely, like, not our style.
I hope really I can't imagine. I can imagine that, actually.
If anyone's allowed that style, no, I don't think, yeah. that even if you were, that wouldn't be our style. I think we very much believe in, like, I guess, collaboration, and not just with the creative teams either, but, like, we spend loads of time with the business side, like, so the account teams and the strategy side especially, like, all of these things need to come together to create something that can live, like, across all the different mediums that we have now. And I think that's probably one of the things that's changed as well a lot, that we're kind of, like, grateful for how we work.
You used to be able to probably rule through fear kind of thing, if that makes sense. And now I think the best way to get the best work out of an agency is through collaboration and through having that partnership, being, a you know, really close to the account team and the planning. And that is how, you know, you're all going to come together to sort of get the best work. It's not like, you know, go and present this, go and sell this, or don't come back. You know, that's that's not how it is anymore.
I'm sure that we're you know, we're still learning as we go along as well, and, like, we're saying all of this, but there's still probably creative teams that all the time are like, God, what are they talking about, like, why are they saying that, or, like, do you know what I mean? So it's never, the process is always, like, an ongoing thing. I think as long as the product's at the end of a process, like, the creative work itself, as long as everyone's, like, inspired and feeling positive about that, I think, you know, it's inevitable that the process is always, like, a bit of a learning curve for everyone. And we definitely feel like that now, like, with this new role as ECDs, we're kind of, like, learning all kinds of new stuff that we didn't necessarily realise before.
Yeah, and I think when you're approaching your leadership empathetically, it then allows for your teams to also view you in an empathetic light as well, and understand, actually, this is your first time doing this. This is quite new to you still. And I think when, if you are open and vulnerable to that and how you're approaching them, then it's mirrored so much more, rather than you going in and being like, it's our way or the highway, like, here's the paper bin. That's when they'll then be like, oh, God, like, shut up.
Imagine
what's
going
on?
We just randomly just changed, like, hard line into the way we were as creative directors.
The way that we work at Leo's, and this isn't just, like, me and James, this is, like, Leo's as a agency and the whole, like, creative leadership team, from, like, Mark, the CCO, and all the creative directors, everyone's got that same spirit of collaboration. And I think what that means is we're all kind of, like, getting involved in the work and the actual, like, detail of the work. Like, I said, we've had creative leaders before that would literally just be like, what are you working on? And you'd kind of tell them and explain the idea, and it's like, yeah, just push it and make it really bold. And so you'd get, I guess, like, leadership through those, like, pep talks. And
yeah, you're like, great, can't wait now. Like,
yeah,
I want to do
that. Both looking at each other like, shit.
Exactly. And at the time, it's funny because you're always like, yeah, we'll do that. And then you kind of look at each other afterwards. It's like, do you know what they actually mean?
Yeah, what are they talking about?
What are we talking about? But at Leo's, it's very much like all the creative leaders are hands-on with the work. And I think that's brilliant. But it does create a challenge as well, because you're trying to, on the one hand, I suppose, be inspired and give those inspirational pep talks. But on the other hand, you're being, like, very much in the weeds of the work, and actually, like, to get from this meeting to this meeting, we need to do this set of things. And like, when you're actually in the process of creating, like we'd be the first to admit that we're right as much as we are wrong, you know. And,
yeah.
And often it feels the same when you're wrong as it does when you're right. You don't really realize until afterwards which way it's going to go. So I think that's one of the challenges that we find is like, how on one hand can you be inspirational as a leader and give people the motivation, while on the other hand you're navigating like just like the day-to-day of a creative process of being like down in the detail.
Yeah, because you don't want to jump in because you want them to do the do and learn, but equally like there's still the same pressure on you to deliver and get it right at the same time. So so you've been at Leo's just over 7 years. I'm keen to understand like how I think those internal promotions were always really interesting to me, of how you then have navigated from kind of what you were saying of how do we stop almost like being a creative and then being an ECD, and you've actually done that journey within one agency. So like, how's that journey been, being there for so long and now being in a much more of a leadership position?
Well, I think the steps are feel quite gradual when you do it within an agency. It doesn't feel quite as like hard line, now I'm this person in this new agency. So I think, I mean, having never done that, so I took these steps, this is just like, I don't know what I think it might feel like. But I think because when we were creative, say, for example, we would probably start to like look after bits of business or jobs and things like that, sort of certain projects. So we'd almost start doing the creative directorship role before we were ever creative directors, if that makes sense. Even having teams like working into us in certain things and stuff like that. So you're sort of grooming yourself into that sort of position, which has obviously been supported by the creative lead at the time. So that was, you know, Shaka, when sort of she promoted us to CDs. And then I guess you sort of, when you've got a really good relationship with, which we've sort of been really lucky to have with a really good client like McDonald's, it sort of made sense then when that time come to sort of like put somebody into sort of that position to sort of look after a bit of that business. We'd sort of had that relationship. So it sort of, we took that step. And then, like I said, because we'd already sort of been doing it, we had a great relationship with the clients and stuff like that. It didn't feel like a massive leap or anything.
Yeah, you're not suddenly
and
like...
And also when you sort of do that thing, which is probably one of the hardest roles, I would say, I think, which is a straddled role where you're sort of, you're actually a creative director on a bit of business, but you're actually still writing on other bits of business. And to do both at the same time is actually, it's actually really difficult, I think. But yeah, I think because you sort of do it gradually, it doesn't feel like there's like a massive change. And then eventually you look back and you're like, okay, by the time of you come to like the end of the sort of the creative directorship sort of time when we were doing that, you'd sort of, to when you started, you changed massively actually, and you'd become a different kind of person. But it's really gradual versus, I imagine, if we'd left and just become a creative director somewhere else, it would have been a lot more like of a massive step change.
Probably. Yeah, it's much more, it's like a complete new environment, new accounts, new everything then, isn't it? Which makes it feel much more real, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I can imagine, again, like we're speaking from our own personal experience and without like having the experience of doing it a different way. But when I do like sort of sit around and think about this stuff, I can imagine there's benefits, right, to going and taking everything you've learned to a new agency, because it's like a clean start and it's a fresh set of clients, and you can kind of like absorb all the lessons and all the knowledge and everything that you've like built in your own kind of like skill set, and then share it with a new set of people and see what they make of it and what feedback you get from that and how you can learn from each other. So I can imagine that there's benefits to doing it that way as well. But I think what's been really helpful for us doing it the way that we have is we're kind of like always learning as we go along, and you kind of like you're actually more equipped and more prepared for each of those steps, because they kind of come even though like the official announcements of things is kind of like the moment where those milestones are marked, you're kind of already doing that stuff before you get to that point. So you're actually more equipped for doing the job when you actually start doing it, if that makes sense. So there's things, while I'm saying that, there's things which are a challenge as well, you know, like in this new role as ECDs, it's very much a job about the creative product, which is what we're the most comfortable and most familiar with, but there's also like management responsibilities.
Yeah, it's all the like, business stuff.
Yeah, and it's like down to like things like making sure creative teams have done their timesheets, you know, and we would be the first to tell you that we would have never imagined ourselves as the people like chasing down a timesheet.
I'm like, you enjoying that part? How's that going?
I wouldn't say that we're enjoying that part specifically. We're enjoying like learning that part. And like we said at the start, you're always learning. I think the best people in this industry are always able to, whether it feels like in the moment, good or bad, you're always able to kind of like learn something. And we're really lucky because like Mark, who's a CCO at Leo's now, is so brilliant at all that stuff, and there couldn't be a better person to learn the stuff that we're not good at from than yeah. Mark. He's amazing at, as a creative leader, in the sense of like running a creative department, which has just like never been our experience before. So mm-hmm. we couldn't really be in a better place yeah. to learn that stuff.
I think the only potential downside, which I don't think we've really experienced in this specific step, is when I relate this back to when you're sort of in an agency. So our first agency we were in for like 7 years mm. because we started out as like juniors, you know, really wet behind the ears, didn't know what we were doing. And then you sort of work your way through and you've been there for a long time. You're sort of like midweight creatives, you know, you're doing quite well there. You still get looked at, I think, as like the kids by a lot of the people, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. So it's really hard to sort of change a perception, I think, by doing a movement within an agency. You sort of always get looked at as the role you started at. And yeah. sometimes having that fresh start is a brilliant way to sort of to reintroduce yourself, and you come in as whatever you are at that mm-hmm. moment in time, and you don't have any of that sort of like baggage from before. But I think actually, I don't think like we've felt any of that necessarily here. Maybe it's different when you're moving from a junior creative to a senior creative mm-hmm. versus moving from a senior creative to creative director to mm-hmm. ECD. And I think at a time as well, we've been really looking at the agencies, like seeing a lot of change as well. So
yeah.
we've been in a massive like growth period. So there's a lot of new people have joined over that time as well. So it's not just like the same people. And now we've just got a different role with all the same people that we had, that we were working with before. There's a lot of new people. So mm-hmm. I guess they get to come in and appreciate you in the light that you are at that moment in time versus before.
Yeah. So there you go.
Well, I guess everyone's got a different leadership style and different journeys, I suppose, work well with different leadership mm-hmm. styles. And I can imagine like how a fresh start for some people would work really well. But I think the style of leadership that we aspire to do, and hopefully that people would say that is our style, is very much like by doing it, acting. I guess, and acting it. And I suppose that works really well within the setup that we've got, where we've kind of like learned each of the individual roles along the way of an agency. That we can kind of put all this stuff into practice. So that would be our style of doing it, is like mm-hmm. Through our own experience and like getting stuck in with everybody else, and that's what works for us. There'd never be like anything that we'd ask a creative team to do, and we always say this, that we haven't or wouldn't do ourselves. Mm-hmm. Whether that's, I remember we were doing a campaign for McDonald's recently called Fries Claims, and we had to like really hustle to make that job happen. You know, it was kind of like a small budget relatively by McDonald's standards, mm-hmm. and some of the huge campaigns we make for that amazing brand. And so it was really hustling. We had to shoot it all in a day. It was live. It was in Leo Burnett. And the time we had to start doing it was like 4 a.m. We had to all get to the agency to like set up like this fake office that we'd built inside Leo Burnett. And there's no people, you know, normally when you go into a McDonald's shoot, especially, you've got hundreds of people, like some people you don't even know what they're doing on
yeah,
the set, you know,
they just
sort of like stood around. It's like, whereas this was very much like, there was no people. It was like our creative team, Gina and Freya, were literally building this office themselves. And they were really surprised when we walked in and it was like 4 a.m. because it was like, oh, we weren't expecting to see you here. And it's like, we would never ask you to do anything mm-hmm. that we wouldn't do ourselves happily.
Yeah.
So, and that's very much like how we like to work with the teams.
Yeah, I think it's nice as well, because you've done it in an agency where still some of the people that you were with before being promoted and before that are still there, and it's like they know that you've sort of been there, mm-hmm. done that, got the t-shirt type of thing. We need to talk about McDonald's. Mm-hmm. You can't go away with not talking about McDonald's. Firstly, what's your order? Your Mackey's order?
Oh, God.
Well, interestingly, mine would, as a vegetarian, would be a McPlant, sometimes a double if I'm mm-hmm. Feeling hungry, medium fries, and probably if I really want, you know, if I got what I really want, it'd be a strawberry milkshake as well.
Unreal.
My absolute favourite McDonald's order has got to be McDonald's fries. I've eaten so many fries in my life, and it's really, I say it's hard, it's not really hard at all. It's hard in the easiest sense of the word, but we make so much work with that brand, and every time we shoot anything, like all the home economists, they just literally bring you plates of McDonald's fries the whole day.
That's so unreal.
Thousands. I was on, just before I went on holiday, we were shooting two separate brand campaigns, which will be coming out later on this year. And I must have eaten a million fries on that shoot.
They are the best ones, though.
Yeah, they're
they definitely. They absolutely are. No, they are.
I don't think so.
I can say that.
I think that's the... Yes.
I don't have any bias, and they're the best. Also, for fellow veggies, the veggie McChicken It's not in the UK, which makes me so angry, but it's definitely the best one.
Oh, well, we'll take that.
I've had that in Switzerland, actually.
Yeah, it's unreal. Please let them know that I said that.
we'll take that back, that feedback.
Yeah. So how long have you been leading that account?
A long time now, yeah. I think like maybe 5 years, 5 or 6 years. Maybe 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years, I think,
And yeah, I think like you can obviously see as well that the work has dramatically changed, and what we were talking about before of the fact that audience has changed, so formats need to change, and that like populist side of it also needs to tie into it. How did you navigate that relationship with such a massive account?
Well, I think we're really lucky that we had a good relationship with the clients themselves. The clients are brilliant, and because we've already started as like junior, as senior creatives on that sort of working, we'd sort of established a relationship where they trusted us because we'd already done some really good work with them. But I think, yeah, I think they've been brilliant on that journey that we've been on. I think the focus that we've sort of, you know, had on the work over the last 5 years is on like leveraging like the iconicity that the brand has. We're really lucky, I guess, that we have a brand which has such incredible like iconicity, so we've always tried to like pull back to that and always put the brand at the heart of it, rather than making like, you know, previously I think we'd sort of, including ourselves, you know, we'd made work which was, you know, a sort of a side story, and then like McDonald's sort of like appears at some part in it. But the thing that we've tried to do over the past 5 years is, you know, leverage the iconicity of the brand, the iconic products, the, you know, the things that are sort of right there at the heart of it, and push that and make sure that the brand is like right at the heart of any story we tell, not necessarily just like a byproduct. If that makes sense.
Like Leo's and McDonald's have got this like amazing history and this amazing partnership. It's like 40 years old or something, and we've actually still got people at Leo's who've like worked on McDonald's for that full 40 years.
So that's amazing.
Like, there's a huge amount of like knowledge and brand experience, but also like ourselves, like we go to McDonald's all the time. I was showing someone the other day my banking app, and it sort of tracks all of your visits. And I was showing like in the past year I've been in a McDonald's like over like 150 times, you know. And that's just by, sometimes like, to be honest, it's like there's one right by Charing Cross, so like when I'm wandering home
it's helpful.
On an evening, it's helpful. But like a lot of times we'll just go and we'll like buy a McCafe, or we'll just go and sit there and just kind of like observe and watch people, like not in a creepy way, but we'll just kind of like see what people are up to. And that's like now as someone who works on the brand, but before, even when I was like a kid, I used to get taken for a treat, you know, by my family. Very similar upbringing to Jim. Going to McDonald's would be like a once a month kind of like, that would be like the highlight of a month as a kid. And then as a teenager, like going into McDonald's like literally every single day after college and after school. So there's a huge amount of personal lived experience between ourselves, and then each member of the team working on that account has got their own version of that. So I think everyone loves McDonald's, and I think that's like the key to it. But I think what was happening maybe when we first jumped onto the account like 5 or 6 years ago was we had that love and that knowledge and that respect for McDonald's as a brand, but we were still like letting advertising instincts get in the way of it. Like, what's the clever story, or what's the funny ad idea that builds up to this reveal of McDonald's? And that's not the wrong thing to do, and it works really well for McDonald's, but for us, we kind of looked at that and we took a step back, and it's like, that isn't the, when we talk about trying to create a role in culture for our brands, which is what populist creativity really means, and that's like what we champion all the time at Leo's. Some brands you have to work really hard to find that role in culture, but McDonald's has got an authentic role in culture that most people are familiar with. And I think we just didn't quite realise it, or we're letting our advertising instincts get in the way. But what was really helpful for this specific thing, very unhelpful for a lot of other things, was the pandemic hit. And I think we went through a period where we came really close together with a brand on a personal level. We had that shared experience, but it actually taught us a few things. And that was the first time that McDonald's had ever closed for business in the UK. And in that period of time, like whatever it was, 2 to 4 weeks where McDonald's weren't serving its customers, what we observed was amazing at that point. You could see all over social media, like people like just driving up to close McDonald's and crying.
Longing at the window.
You saw that clip on This Morning of like John Turode trying to cook a McMuffin and it's setting on fire. And, you know, just this huge amount of love and affection and a genuine role in culture that McDonald's had. And I think that was the first point where we really looked at it and thought, do you know what? McDonald's, we don't have to do anything. Yep. McDonald's exists in culture already. Mm. And ever since that point, we've tried to change the way that we approach work to, rather than focusing on like advertising ideas and clever stuff, our focus is always on the culture of McDonald's as a brand and celebrating mm-hmm. that. And obviously there's still a role for advertising ideas, but they're in service of mm-hmm. the authentic role that McDonald's has in culture. So yeah. The starting point for every single piece of work we say is to every team that works on McDonald's, what you need to find is something that's true to McDonald's fandom, that exists in culture. So mm-hmm. if you're working on a brand campaign, what's true about McDonald's as a brand? Okay, like when people invite each other to McDonald's, sometimes you don't even need words to do that. That's something that anyone can relate to. It's true. No other brand could say that, but it's true to the iconicity and the culture mm-hmm. of McDonald's. And then that's when you're bringing like all the advertising techniques and skill. Okay, what if you turned that into an eyebrow raise, for example?
Yeah.
That'd be sticky. So that's kind of like the process. And that's what we stick to from a brief, as a small brief or the biggest brand briefs.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that going through that journey with McDonald's has affected or altered how you approach different client relationships as well and approach work for different brands?
Yeah, I think so. I think it, like everything you do sort of impacts how you think about everything else, I mm-hmm. think. McDonald's, I guess, is one of those brands that like genuinely does live in culture, probably more so than a lot of brands out there. There's, you know, there's probably only a handful of brands that are genuinely, you know, globally that sort of have that sort of effect, that would have that effect over a pandemic where you're, you know, it's not just, you know, it's not just fast food that you're craving. It's specifically mm-hmm. like that brand's fast food. So there aren't probably many brands, like luckily, you know, we're lucky that we get to work on that one, that have that sort of level of iconicity that sort of allow us to sort of to do that so well, I think, mm-hmm. probably.
Yeah, but I think you take like lessons. No two brands are ever going to be the same.
Yeah.
And it's not just the brand itself. It's obviously the team, the brand's team that are working at, and then the relationships and the partnership. So nothing's ever going to be exactly the same. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely things I think that are transferable, and there's mm-hmm. things that we've learned through that process that we went on, kind of like, I wouldn't say reinventing the way that we do McDonald's advertising, but just like trying to evolve it to make it feel cultural, that we can now take as lessons mm-hmm. and we try and bring back to like other brands that we work with. Even if that's as simple as, okay, another brand that we work with might not have that same like iconic role in culture that McDonald's does genuinely, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have its own set of like truths around the brand
that yeah.
any person in the audience could relate to. It's similar to, we started working with Morrison's recently, for example. Even though that's not exactly the same as McDonald's, you could still go on TikTok and you could find videos about people just talking about how to cram as much salad as possible
like that's salad
box, you know, and like how it's like a game of Tetris, and, you know, how if you just put like fill it with boiled eggs and get all cheese in the gaps, you're like maximizing your value of
funny
of a salad.
That's bath. Given so me such like a funny memory of going to Morrison's with my nan and her taking elastic bands so that she could elastic band the salad boxes shut, which
very
is
smart.
You look back and you're like, oh, she was on something. That's genius.
Yeah, but then I can smile because I went to Morrison's as a northerner, like that was like my supermarket, and I've done exactly that mm-hmm. same thing, and there's a whole bunch of people. So I think that's kind of like, that's what we try and do with all the brands, even if it doesn't look exactly the same mm-hmm. as it does on McDonald's. I think that's what populist creativity really means, is like finding something that everyone can kind of like see themselves in. That's mm-hmm. what the populist part of populist yeah. creativity means to us. So I can relate to that insight that you're talking about with your nan and the elastic band. What the creativity side of things then is used to enhance that mm-hmm. populist truth, if that makes sense. So how would you bring that insight to life in a way that is unexpected or bold or lets people get involved?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like our personal definition of what populist creativity means.
Nice. Yeah, it's like playing on like the populist side of it and the current side of it, but also like the nostalgic side at the same time, which is then really interesting. Because I think there's such like a drive on pop culture and what's relevant right now, but then you're missing out on that, like, how do we make people have these weird memories of their nan taking them to Morrison's type of thing, which is really
universal. I think those are like, that's the thing I think we, like Andy's saying, we've taken through, is like those universal truths that mm-hmm. everybody can understand. They're what popular, but they're not saying they're popular, so they're popular because everybody understands them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, Morrison's is, I feel like it gets a bad rep because it is one of the best supermarkets.
I think it's just it's hard for us to say because we're both Northerners and that was where we grew up. I actually worked at Morrison's as well, so
amazing. I've got a lot of friends in the background. Of course you did. Like, as a Northerner, it's like, yeah, there's only
a few jobs. McDonald's and Morrison's are a few jobs that you would have as a Northerner growing
up. I love that. You're looking back now, like, I've been here for so long in London.
It all
doing
just makes
a different
sense,
job.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it's all equated to this. And have you found that there's like a massive difference when, I think you're so embedded with McDonald's and you understand their taste and how to approach the work and what they want. Have you found that there's a big difference on how you approach like even the taste side of things with different accounts and even with sort of then blending that with your personal taste? Because when you're so embedded into something, it's hard to then not adopt that as your own.
Everyone's obviously got their own subjective personal taste. And like I said, we've been on this journey with McDonald's for a long time now. And a lot of the brand team that work at McDonald's have kind of like come up through the ranks as around the same time as we have been as well. So we've had a lot of shared experience, like developing taste together and sharing knowledge and sharing inspiration. So it's kind of hard to sometimes think like, where does our taste end and theirs begin? It's become like, it's a shared taste that we've got with that brand, and you're not going to be lucky enough to have that with every brand straight away, I guess. But you need to, I think one of the first things you should really do when you're working with a brand in any way is to try and develop a shared language around creativity and a shared taste. And there's loads of different ways to do that. We always we'll do things like send inspiration newsletters to our brand teams, or we'll do presentations on, this is some stuff that we've seen recently. And what you're really trying to do there, I think, is obviously hopefully provide inspiration that people haven't seen, but it's not really about that. It's more about just trying to open a dialogue around work, sometimes away from the actual products that you're creating together. And that's what you can kind of learn about each of us tastes a little bit.
I think definitely away from the work, that's one thing that's been really helpful on McDonald's, is each year we sort of sit down with them and we talk about what kind of work do we want to make together. You know, like, what does that look like? What is that going to look like in a year when we sort of look back at what we've done? Is that going to sort of tick those boxes? What is our sort of ambition for the creative output throughout the year, and sort of trying to do that as well across like more clients as well, as we sort of progress.
Do you think that there are particular industries or spaces that advertising should pull more inspiration from?
My answer to that is yes, definitely. I feel like advertising should pull inspiration from everywhere. My own personal inspiration comes from a bunch of places that I'm really inspired by, design and fashion and gaming and film specifically. And like when we look at, especially like the craft side of anything, you're kind of pulling and drawing on all of that experience. And I think you have to be able to absorb that. That's how you can find unexpected ways, I suppose, of bringing a populist truth to life. But I also, and I guess everyone will have different points of view on this, but I also a big believer in drawing inspiration from the industry as well. And like, we'll be the first to say, we spend a lot of time looking at, you know, it was D&AD the other night, and I've probably like looked at every single entry at this point. And I just enjoy appreciating the, I guess, like the medium of advertising as well. So I think it's very important that you know the craft of advertising, and maybe advertising is the wrong word these days. Like, maybe it's just creativity with marketing and brands as the outlet for that creativity. I think trends are changing so quickly and the canvas is changing so quickly. I think you need to be able to appreciate that and keep up with that. But that shouldn't be your only source of inspiration. And it'll, what that other inspiration is could look, it might be football for someone. It could be anything, you know.
Definitely agree.
And I think it like allows you to then look a little bit more holistically at the actual advertising stuff when you're not just solely consuming that all the time. But also on that level of, like you said, you need to appreciate that as a craft in its own right too.
I think so. Definitely. And I think, again, it's about pulling those two things together. And that's like a lot of what we try and do with advertising and our role and creativity with brands is, I guess you're pulling a few different things together to create something new. That's where that comes from. We're really lucky as a creative team, I think, that we've got very similar taste, and our sources of inspiration are not exactly the same, but they're more or less the same. So it means that we've actually got quite a joined up way of thinking.
And I think there are sort of two types of that as well. When you look at, like, when we talk like looking at inspiration from like outside of advertising, I think you're looking at things like craft and certain elements like that, like how a film might look or what something might look or sound like or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's also other things within the world of advertising where that is true, but also you're looking at how like that specific story was told from like an advertising perspective. So like not just like what that thing looks like that you're sort of, you know, looking at from the world of advertising, but like how they've sort of told that story as well for mm-hmm. like a marketing or advertising audience, I think is really important. I think that's something that we definitely draw a lot of like inspiration from within the industry, that's slightly different from just, you know, how it's graded or what it sounds like.
Yeah, true. And there's so many levels to it, isn't there, that you wouldn't have even been able to pick up on or know the reference of. Like, mm-hmm. I love it when I'm chatting with someone about a piece of work and they're like, oh, I've got the reference from like this music video from the 70s. And obviously I'm a nerd, so I go and watch music video from the 70s. Yeah, yeah. And then it's suddenly like, it makes it so much more interesting. And you kind of go down that path of like, where the hell did you get that from? But it works.
Exactly. And what happens like for all the time, like I'll be like, I'm obsessed with watching films and especially like I just come back from holiday. So I feel like I've got some jet lag that's like keeping mm-hmm. me up until like 3 or 4. So I've been like watching things far too late at the moment. And so I'll see like a shot in a film, for example. I saw one the other night. It was a really amazing like fisheye lens shot. And it's like, oh, I'd love to put that in one of the films that we make for our brand at some point, because it looks so cool. But then you realize when you're actually making a film for a brand and you're trying to tell a story, that really cool shot that I was so inspired by doesn't actually serve like the advertising message or the brand. And I think that's why, in my opinion, you need to have an appreciation for both side of things, mm-hmm. be able to pull inspiration from anywhere. But the real skill, I think, is then how do you use that inspiration in mm-hmm. a way that services like the advertising idea or the brand. And sometimes when I see work, that's a thing that feels like maybe it's got muddled sometimes.
Yeah, you like have to realize that you can't do the art house shots for Morrison sometimes.
Yeah,
that
it just like
won't make sense.
Every single thing that you think is cool into a piece of work because you think it's cool. And it doesn't mean that stuff's not cool. It just means that maybe it doesn't work when you put it all together and then try and use it to land a brand message, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah, for sure. Final question for both of you. I want you both to answer separately. So I'm addressing that now, not as a team. if they're like looking back at when you joined the industry, and obviously for junior talent or people at that sort of like early stages of their career entering, what is a piece of advice that you would give them now that you maybe didn't have?
Yeah, that's a good question, I think. And I guess like, yeah, maybe I'm going to answer that by thinking of like what advice would I give myself mm-hmm. back then in that situation. But I think the biggest thing I could say to anyone like getting into the industry would be to enjoy it, you know. And I don't just mean like enjoy doing it, you know, the act of like sitting down and doing it, but I mean like actually enjoy it as a medium for creativity. I didn't like I was talking about like growing up on the internet and, mm-hmm. and, you know, like exploring creativity. And I didn't at that point like necessarily have an appreciation of advertising. I certainly didn't sit down at that point and be like, I want to make those things that I see like interrupting my cool show. Like that mm-hmm. wasn't like the reason I got into the industry, but I enjoyed being creative. And I think what I now realize is I'm really lucky because I enjoy being creative, and I've found to enjoy like advertising, I guess, and brand building as a outlet and a medium for that creativity. So I think that just enjoy it and appreciate it as a medium mm-hmm. for creativity, and consume it and see it and debate and get jealous by it, and sometimes just like throw it all on the table and take a step away. But I think all of that helps you, I think, enjoy it, the roller coaster of a journey, because it's never easy. And like Jim said a few times, like the timing always gets shorter. The canvas is bigger, so it's a hard endeavor. But I think as long as you're enjoying it, and we're so lucky to be able to do this job, and I have to tell myself that now, so it's mm-hmm. not just advice for young creative, it's advice that I give myself all the time. It's like, we're really lucky to be doing this. We found an outlet for our creativity that is fun, you mm-hmm. know.
Mm-hmm. I would say, I don't know if this is more specific sort of thing, but to try to, one thing that I think that we've sort of been lucky enough to sort of do along the way is that thing of like learning other skills around the side of what you literally do. So obviously our day-to-day job is sitting down, coming up with ideas and sort of seeing that through. But I think the things that have been really helpful for us, and partly because maybe we have like a natural interest in like learning a lot more things, but it's actually, I think, find them very helpful. So like I have an interest in like photography, so certain things. So learning other things which sort of skirt around the outside of like the literal job that we do. So, you know, sitting with, you know, spend the time to like learn like how Photoshop actually works, or what, you know, what lenses change, you know, when you're taking shots, or lighting and things like that. So you can be like, though, having that information or learning how to like pull stuff together, like into a really nice, you know, obviously you can have people, you have a design department that might pull together like a, you know, a layout for you, or might do mock-ups, or might even make like the deck look brilliant for you. But actually trying to learn a little bit of all those little things that you can along the way, and having an interest in them, if possible, ideally you would have an interest in, but if not, definitely trying to learn those things, I think has been really helpful in being able to have like, get the right things out of other people when you need to get them, and mm-hmm. sort of like, and being able to sort of get your opinion like across on something, and be able to like articulate exactly what you mean at certain moments, because you understand what it is that you're talking about literally, rather than just like, oh, it just doesn't feel right, you yeah. know. So I think learning the things that you're not meant to, that you don't need to do, I mm-hmm. think is like really helpful, I think, to like get to like really good work. And that's something we've done naturally, but no one ever said like try to learn those things around
yeah,
the side.
Yeah, you just pick it up.
I think you just sort of mm-hmm. pick it up, or you don't, maybe. Mm-hmm. But like, I think that's really helpful, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think it all, like, something will always supplement what you literally have to do if you just almost allow it to. And I do think that there is such a, I don't know, it's like blinkers, isn't it? Have been like, this is your job, this is what you need to do. Whereas actually those people that approach things in a slightly more hybrid way, and just like I think it's the curiosity and like being inquisitive, isn't it? Of how does this work? Because realistically, if you understand how the camera works and how the lenses and everything, it's only ever going to make it better, because you can speak that language more. So yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, nice. Thanks, guys. Cool. Thank you so much for having me.